Today is our fourth session in retirement planning. And we're going to be covering financial security, sources of income, social security, personal expenses, and investment strategies. Do you have the answers to all of these?
No.
Maybe we can learn a few. Why don't we go around the room and introduce ourselves again, because we've had people come and go, and just tell us your name and where you're from and whether you're retired.
Merle Hayes, I'm from Minneapolis, and I'm still working.
What do you do, Merle?
I'm a psychiatric social worker.
We'll have to watch what we say now. Okay? You want to continue in the back row there?
I'm Vivian Rice, Portland, Oregon.
I'm Helen Sundin from St. Paul. I no longer work. I was a commercial artist, and I haven't been doing that for 28 years.
I'm Ruth Bouts. She makes me still work. And I'm tired, not retired.
Where are you from, Ruth?
Florida.
Where are you from?
Florida, Fort Lauderdale.
And how about in this front row here?
Ruth Robinson from Long Beach, and I'm retired.
Okay.
Patrick Swanson, semi-retired from Minneapolis.
June Swanson from Minneapolis, retired.
I'm John Sobeck from Seattle, I'm retired.
I'm Sally Wilson from Portland, Oregon, and I'm not retired.
Ernie Anderson, Everett, Washington, and I worked for Weyerhaeuser for over 30 years, I'm retired.
I'm Guy Boltz from California, and I'm retired.
Where in California?
Willow Creek.
Pete Pedro, Sheila, Washington, retired.
Okay. As far as the sources of income are concerned, in retirement you have Social Security, 44% of those who are retired receive their income from Social Security. Pensions, annuities, and dividends, and interest, and rent, and gifts amounts to about 43%. Earnings, those who are still working, 10%. And SSI, that Social Security, the program for the ones who are being assisted, and the public assistance is 3%. These are figures which are based on the information from the 1985 Census Bureau.
That's pretty good, though, only 3% on some form of welfare.
That's pretty good, yes. Would you help yourself to the material up there, folks, if you haven't had? But of course, a lot of people retire on Social Security, and they find that they are not able to spend it. We have a lot of people that come down to Florida, and when they first came, they were in pretty good shape. But then when they retire and find out that they're living there for 10, 15, 20 years, it gets a little tight on what they proposed that they were able to have as far as adequate income is concerned. We're having some newcomers come in, and we shall have them introduce themselves and tell us where they're from and whether they're retired or not. Let's start over here with
Margaret.
Hang loose. Where are you from, Tim?
We're from Auburn, Washington.
Legs are and you're not retired?
Me too.
Good. Who else came in the late shift?
Carlin Beat Cawthorne. I'm retirement age, but I'm still working. We actually were drawing Social Security and
good. And where are you from?
On Prospect, Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else we miss? Yes.
I'm Rich Anderson. I live here at Holden. I'm retired.
Good to have you, Rich. Okay, The major sources of income then are pensions and profit-sharing plans, do-it-yourself pensions, social security, part-time work, and investments. Have any of you who are retired now found this to be untrue? Or do you have any other ways in which you have income? Other than what's listed up here?
You could possibly inherit something, I suppose.
That's right. That's not up there.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lotto down in Florida now. And you know what the latest amount of money that they were going to give out for the right numbers?
52 million, I just read.
52 million. You could retire on that, couldn't you? Right.
Is that the highest it's ever been in the state?
That's as high as it's been, as far as I know. California had one just below that.
Yeah.
Right.
How do the people in Florida like that? The voters in Minnesota have to vote on that this November.
How do we like it?
Yeah.
Well,
do we have a lottery or
not? It depends what the money is eventually going to be used for. It was supposed to be used for education. And the elderly were supposed to get a portion of it. In Pennsylvania, the elderly do get money from the so-called gambling, which goes on statewide, you know. I don't know what's going to happen in Florida. We just had it inaugurated the first of the year. So it's still in its infancy.
Really, that's too much money to give one person.
Yes, sure is.
They should cut it down when it gets to be a million.
Mm-hmm.
Then the second number should win.
Yeah.
It's just too much. They can't, there's no way they could possibly spend.
They don't get it all at one time. You understand?
Oh, yeah, even then,
period of time, right.
Even a million, they get plenty to live on.
Right.
What happens if they die? Do their heirs get it?
I don't know.
I don't think it gambles.
In Illinois, it goes for education.
It does?
It should.
How long have you had it in Illinois?
Oh, my. I would guess 5 years. We've never played it, so it doesn't concern me much.
You see a lot of money.
The question is it being used for the right thing? You know, when they had the casino gambling issue up, I was a part of a group that was against it, and we defeated it in Florida. But they were always pointing up the fact that in New Jersey, they have that. Casino gambling, and it certainly has changed Atlantic City.
It sure has.
But it depends what you mean by change in Atlantic City.
Right.
It's changed the seaboard there along the boardwalk, but the rest of the city is still a pretty sad place, yes.
Could you explain the percentages that you have?
Yes, those percentages are based on the sources of income for individuals age 65 and older from the U.S. Census Bureau. In other words, this is the average. 44% of those who are 65 and older, their income comes from Social Security to the extent of 44%. Does that explain it?
Or is that would be the average retired
right.
person,
44%
of his income comes from Social Security.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And someone had remarked earlier when some of you weren't here that the SSI and the public assistance is only 3%, which is a good indication, although many people who've come down to Florida and who are retired find it difficult going on what they first came down with, if they live long. Because some of the biggest expenses, of course, are in health care. Now, I passed out a couple of these little quizzes for you. The first one on financial planning. You're supposed to circle the correct answer. The first step in financial planning is to define your needs and goals and set priorities. Is that true or false?
True.
Discretionary money is what is left after you've met all basic expenses. Now is the time to estimate what your leisure activities in retirement will cost. Do you need to carry liability insurance once you retire?
Yes.
It says you do not need. So it's, the answer is false, right. Pre-retirees should consider the need to provide for dependents, such as elderly parents. You know what the sandwich generation is? Those people who still have children and whose parents are their responsibility. So those people are responsible for both ends of the age frame. Financial planning should be done in consultation with your family. It's always a good idea to eliminate the second car to save money in retirement. Why is that?
You could save money, right?
It's false.
Depends upon the need, I guess.
Depends on each individual case, right. Here's one. Medicare will cover all health care costs once you're 65.
That's a joke.
You know, there are a lot of people that still believe that you can go into a nursing home and be covered by Medicare. We put on a health care campaign in Florida, AARP, and even many of our members thought that was the case, which is not true. Mutual fund withdrawal plans are always a good idea for the retiree.
It's a must, isn't it?
Why?
They require it if you get reached over 70 and a half.
Mutual fund.
No, this is mutual fund.
Okay, I'm sorry.
You're talking about...
IRAs.
All right, let's get straightened around IRAs. I just started drawing mine. You can draw it when you're 70 and a half.
You have to start drawing it.
You have to start drawing it a year from when you're 70 and a half. But you can start drawing it when you're 70, if you want to.
Oh, you are when you're 69 too, if you want to.
Yes.
Sorry, you're
59. Yeah, 59.
Right. Yes.
Would you talk about that mutual funds withdrawing that you said before? I was just preceding that.
Would I talk about it?
Well, you said, is it wise to...
Right. Let me get it in here. This is my Bible. Mutual funds. Who knows about mutual funds?
Well, maybe they mean that you should do that so you don't take it out all at once later on and pay all the taxes on it. You take it out gradually.
Right, sure. We have an expert right here. Okay.
What?
Go ahead.
Well, a mutual fund is an investment in a... it's usually handled by investment advisors, let's say in New York. And you can invest in that, say $1,000. So what they do with that money, you don't really care. All you want to do is grow and pay dividends or interest. And that fund is usually invested in other vehicles, stocks and bonds. And then you can usually take the money out at will, take $500 or $200 or whatever you want, or have a monthly check sent to you. All this question here is trying to say is, once you retire, should you start drawing on it? And of course, the answer is not necessarily. You may not. If you have other income, you may want to just leave it in there.
Mm-hmm. What is IRA?
That's the individual retirement account, which, if you are working and you pay taxes, you can put up to $2,000 into an IRA, which you will then not be taxed on as far as the income tax is concerned, and when you become eligible to draw it out without any kind of a penalty. then that's income for you.
Does it earn interest?
Of course.
Yeah, how?
Depends where you put it. Depends where you put it. I had mine with a savings and loan. And I had, what kind of interest was it?
I got some at 10.20.
I got some at 12.
Depending on what year, because you know, it went anywhere from 10, 11 down to 7.
All right, so it fluctuates between 7 and 11, 12% sometimes. Okay, I'm trying to find the mutual fund. Did that answer your question?
If we're wise to withdraw it, because what if you have to? I mean, not...
That's wise.
Tighten it, screw on the back.
Yes, yes.
Has to be part of your total package.
This one?
I don't know, whatever.
I don't know how it does.
I think it takes a little more than fingers.
I know. Okay. We'll get it.
Anybody got a wrench in their pocket?
No, I didn't bring my wrench. Okay, where were we? We were on mutual funds.
IRAs.
And IRAs. You know what an IRA is now? Okay. You should wait until retirement to try the dollar diet. What's the dollar diet? Dollar diet. When we get into expenses, maybe we can cover that. Inflation is an important factor in financial planning for retirement.
Absolutely.
Right. It sure is. And financial planning is an ongoing process requiring continual study and review. Right. Okay. Now, what I wanted to share with you from here was that what about life insurance? Do you think you ought to keep life insurance when you're retired?
Not if it's real high. Just enough to take care of your needs, I guess, for your family.
There's a little sheet in here which I haven't shared with you, but it's about your life insurance analysis. The basic purpose of life insurance is to protect your dependents against the financial hardship that they would suffer if you were to die prematurely. Another is to provide liquid assets to settle an estate and thus to avoid the need for an estate sale. The need for life insurance often diminishes as children grow up, leave home. However, each person's situation is unique. Deciding what to do about your life insurance can be complicated. And before determining your future insurance needs, you should find a clear picture of your current coverage. And it lists what your current coverage is, such as in life term insurance, which provides for a certain number of years, and there's no saving component to that. Whole life insurance, also known as straight life, which covers you for your lifetime, also accumulates cash values, and upon your death, beneficiaries get face value only, not face value plus cash. And then there's endowment life insurance, also called retirement income insurance, which provides both life insurance protection and saving benefits, but unlike those which are whole life, focuses more on savings than on protection. And you decide in advance what date you want to receive the face amount during your lifetime. If your death occurs before that date, then the beneficiaries receive the face amount as an insurance. I took out an annuity under ministerial life in which I contributed each year for a number of years. This also was not declared as income because you see that was an agreement between my employer and myself and ministerial life. So that when I became eligible then to receive my annuity, then I received so much a month. And we chose to take out the combination deal in which when I pass, then my wife will receive 75% of what I'm presently receiving. Joint survivors, right. Okay? So that when you have your life insurance and you're looking at it, you look at your present coverage and your projected coverage at age 65. What do you think about investments from income from investments? Where do you think the best place to put your money?
We're waiting for you to tell us.
Safest investment is short-term government obligation T-bills.
T-bills?
Treasury
bills?
That's the safest investment in the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean that that's safe either.
No? You have some question about that?
The government's got a big deficit. Mm-hmm. But they got the power of taxation.
Mm-hmm. They can always print new money, can't they?
They can juggle things around.
Yeah.
What do you think about the annuity that I bought 2 years ago with it? It's backed by Allstate Insurance, and I get 9% interest on it. And how is that annuity different from the other kind of insurance annuity?
Well, each company has their own particular plan. Ministerial Life is only eligible to be purchased by ministers, clergy, and so forth.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know what Allstate is. I never looked into Allstate. All I know about Allstate is
they back it.
Yeah. I was insured by Allstate for how many years, Ruth?
Lots.
In car insurance.
In house.
In house. And then 1 year I got a notice from them saying, I'm sorry, we can't insure you anymore. Oh. So I went down to find out why. Well, it so happened that we had a few little inquiries which we made with our insurance when we were in an accident and we wanted something done to the car, and they counted this against us, even though we didn't have it done and they didn't pay for it. And it got to the point where we decided Allstate wasn't in good hands for us.
No, we just dropped Allstate, Sears, and every affiliation like a hot potato because they just done us wrong and we didn't think it was fair.
Anyway, that's an individual thing, but you have to work out for yourself. What about CDs? You all know what CDs are. You got a question?
Yeah, I want to ask a question about annuities.
Mm-hmm.
You said that, like with the Ministerial Life, after a certain age, you begin receiving a monthly check for
right.
the annuity. Does that go until the annuity is depleted?
As long as you live.
You base it on like an IRA where it's, what do they call it, life...
expectancy.
Your span, lifespan.
Well, yeah, what they guess is your lifespan. An IRA, they call it, what the heck they call it? Life expectancy.
Right.
And you divide that by what you think or they think you'll live and then you take
out let's say you live beyond what you set it up to be.
You still get it.
You get whatever is in your account. They're not going to pay you anything more than it was in your account. But you see, in the case of my IRA, which is with a savings and loan, up to this last April, I was putting something in each month. Then I started to receive it. The interest which I earned on those accounts the first month paid for what I took out so that I actually didn't use any of the capital that was there.
Depends on how long you have it set up, what rate you get.
Don, isn't it, aren't there some annuities that are set up so that on life expectancy,
mm-hmm.
but they go on until your death, even though the principal is exhausted?
Which ones are those?
There are some.
I thought so too. There were some.
Yeah.
They're all set up in different ways.
Right.
You know.
Right. I think with Ministerial Life, it's only for the.
You have an account.
The extent of the money which you have in there, plus the interest. Yeah.
I haven't gotten a question yet.
Yeah.
My question is, you said then if you died, you would get 75% of that.
What I still have left in the account.
Right. What happens when she dies and there's still money left in the account?
Then it goes to our heirs.
So it becomes a part of your estate?
Right. That's right. Okay? Yes?
Speaking of estate now, I forget the name of it. Is it will to put your, is it called estate planning where you don't have to have a lawyer?
Yes, we're going into that a little bit later. Okay, you want to hold it?
Best kind of investments are utility companies.
You mean in the stock market?
The people always need electricity and gas.
They're not stock market, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sure.
Were any of you in the stock market this last September?
Yes.
Nope, when it went down?
Yes.
Did it affect you?
Yes.
You can't always depend on the stock market.
I lost $3,000.
Oh, dear. You speak from experience, right? Okay, let's take the second sheet that I gave you. If I can find it in all this stuff that's coming along. What's it called?
Did you catch that?
The second sheet, which was another quiz.
Did you catch it?
Did you catch it? I didn't catch mine. I lost one.
Did you catch it?
Did you catch that? Okay, the first step in financial planning is to define your needs and goals and set priorities. Agree with that?
We did that sheet.
That's not what I'm asking.
We did that sheet.
The other one I gave.
Yeah. Here, you got it?
The last one.
Have you got it?
The last one. What's the last one called?
Is it safe to assume?
Is it safe to assume that on the death of a spouse who has been receiving pension benefits, the benefits will continue to be paid the surviving spouse? Is this true or false?
Not necessarily.
False. Right.
It's not safe.
It all depends on how that is written up as far as the pension benefits are concerned. When you are about to receive your pension from the ELCA, for instance, you have to tell them which plan you want. And once you told them, you can't change it. I mean, if you want to include your wife in the plan, fine. At a certain percentage, you're given an option. But once you've decided that, that's it. Under federal law, once you have worked for an employer for at least 5 full years, you're entitled to a full pension from that employer.
False.
Right? With many retirement plans, you have a choice of taking your benefits either in one lump sum or in a monthly payout plan.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. Right? You must wait until age 65 before you can receive Social Security benefits.
False.
How many retired early? Before 65. You're retired?
I'm unemployed.
Huh?
I'm unemployed.
You didn't no. From Social Security?
No.
I didn't think you were old enough. You're unemployed, that's a different thing. As a rule, new business ventures will not break even until between the second and third year of operation.
That's
true. This is for people that are thinking of going into some franchise business or something of that nature. And it costs a lot of money and it may not make anything until after the second or third year. If you sell your home, it's not wise to take back the buyer's IOU. That's false.
I don't understand.
What do you say, Ruth?
That's false.
I get a credit check on the buyer.
If you sell your home, it's not wise to take back the buyer's IOU.
I wouldn't say that wasn't
false.
True. If you get good credit check, it could be a good investment.
In other words, this is a mortgage that you're keeping on the home. And it's income that you will receive.
I guess it depends on what you sell it for and how much is left in the house, whether or not it's wise.
And if they default, you get the house back.
Okay. You should never reduce the total amount of life insurance you carry.
That's awesome.
Right. If you borrow against life insurance policy, you need never repay the loan.
That's awesome.
No, that's true.
True.
It just comes out of the...
It comes out of the face.
Face of the loan.
That's what I'm doing right now.
But they keep charging you interest on that, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, but it's the cheapest interest you can get.
Right.
4%.
Right.
And you're better off to pay them 4% and invest it somewhere else and get 8 or 9.
That's right.
4% for you.
Realize that?
No, I didn't.
But you're still borrowing your own money, though.
Oh, yeah. And your beneficiary at the time of your death will receive less money.
But, well, Don, the trouble with that today is tax rules is that, let's say you borrow it, usually they charge you 6% in today's economy.
Say that louder, can you?
If you borrow on your life insurance policy, it's usually around 6%, say on an average. And so you pay them 6%, let's say you buy a bond and get 10%, but you're paying income taxes on a 10%. It used to be deductible, you know, your 6%, while you're paying interest expense, used to be deductible, it is no longer deductible, new tax laws.
That got just changed this year, right?
Is that changed?
87?
Yeah.
87, right.
87.
Yeah, so it's a new deal.
So you wouldn't be ahead then?
In most cases, you're not gonna be ahead. But in some you will, if you have a very low income tax.
Depends.
It's not automatic, you have to figure out all your rates.
Right. For simplicity, safety, and convenience, you can beat federally insured deposits.
You can't.
You can't beat them.
Right?
You can't, where?
Unless the government...
You mean like CDs?
Right. If you are now named as a beneficiary in someone's life insurance policy or will, you can depend on receiving the money on the other person's death.
No.
That's strange, beneficiary.
Hmm?
That's false.
No, not at once.
That's false.
Might die before then.
Right? Widows may be faced with difficult financial decisions.
Yes.
Right.
How about changing that around, Wills?
Widowers?
Skip the question.
Widowers, right, oh, gosh.
Not my darn.
That's not a good idea.
I'll just put them up here.
Okay, let's get into expenses. Personal expenses. This again is based on 1985 figures of those people who are retired. According to the Census Bureau, this is what they spend as an average. 33% on housing, 19% on food, 16% on transportation, 10% on medical care, 6% on clothing, 5% on contributions that would include church, 4% on entertainment, and 7% on other. I don't know what they mean by other. How does that average out among us here? At one time, we used to say housing should not be more than 25% of your income when you're working. But housing costs have gone up. What are you shaking your head for?
I keep looking at our budget saying 25%, I mean, there's no way.
Right.
There's not a house we could live in for 25% of our budget.
How about 33%?
I don't think it's even close to that.
No? How much would you say you'd have to spend?
Well, I've got a family.
Yeah.
We have to have a bigger house. If I were retired, I could probably get away with a lot less. Get into a condo or something.
You know, ministers are allowed to have their housing declared non-income tax.
That's good.
You still pay social security, though.
Hmm?
You still pay social security.
Does that mean if the church owns the parsonage?
No, no.
You mean even after you're retired?
After you retire, too, right.
How'd you get that?
How'd we get that?
Yeah.
That's the federal income tax law.
Because they don't get that much money to begin with.
So what I receive from the pension board, if I spend that much for housing, then it's non-taxable.
What about the lay people who work for the church?
I don't know, what about them?
Same thing.
Same thing?
No.
No? Really?
But the lay people that work for the church still can have other jobs, right? The lay people that work for the church have other jobs.
No, she's talking about, for instance, the school teachers in the Missouri Senate. These are not ordained clergy.
They can, I think Missouri has worked out something.
And we have a big problem in the ELCA now, you know, because we took in teachers under the AELC, which joined together with the LCA and ALC. And some of those people are what are referred to as called teachers. They're called by the church for the parochial school that the church operates. And some of those feel that they ought to be treated the same way as clergy with all the benefits. And you know what the ELC has said? We'll study it for half a year.
For a while.
Right. It hasn't been determined yet.
On retirement, do you still deduct housing allowance?
Of course.
Because I know actively ordained clergy, in order to do that, have to be under a call.
Mm-hmm.
And the call has to stipulate the amount of housing allowance and specify that.
Right.
It's been a real go-around, especially with ministries.
I know, but you can still do that when you're retired. At least I have been doing it. Because that's what the pension board sends you when they send you your statements for what they have paid you for the year. They say under the tax regulations, if you spend that much, it's non-tax. Yes?
What is that 16% for?
Transportation. Oh. A car.
Mm-hmm. What about taxes? Insurance?
Well, that would come under other. 7%.
Oh.
I would imagine. How about food? Is 19% an adequate amount?
If you're careful, sure.
When the children are gone?
When the children are
gone. Yes, when the children are gone.
But then the grandchildren
come. They
don't
visit too often.
The grandchildren come and they eat you out of the house or home. Right?
You skin out the peanut butter jar.
We have four of them for 2 weeks, we know.
You've had them for 2 weeks?
Yeah. Well, our one daughter has five children, two of which are twin boys, and they're living in Arizona. And I've been out there several times to babysit while their parents went and had their fun. And, of course, I did the grocery job shopping. It just boggled my mind. Like three times a week or four, you would go and spend this horrendous amount of money for groceries. And like a gallon of milk goes one day, a gallon less is a whole week. It's an entirely different ballgame.
I'm going to hold on to this.
Why don't you use the table?
I can't see right down there. I'm getting old.
Pardon me, isn't that awfully low for contributions?
It's low because this is an average for the country.
For the whole country.
Right. And you know, many people don't give too much to the church or to religious groups or make any kind of contribution at all.
What surprises 5%?
Really? Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Right.
That's for the
whole nation. Whole nation.
But work on their income tax form.
Well, you see that.
Yeah.
It swells.
Yeah, right. Okay, here's some ideas about food. Discount coupons, which are available in newspapers and through the mail. It's not advisable to buy products only because of a discount coupon, but it's plain good sense to take advantage of the discounts on products you already use. The pennies saved quickly add up to dollars. Is that true?
Sure.
How about paying attention to unit pricing when grocery shopping? Unit pricing, which is available in many stores, shows you the cost per ounce or the cost per pound on most products. Considerable savings can often be realized by buying products in larger containers.
Not always.
Caution, it says.
Go back to unit pricing, that's the only way.
Don't be penny wise and pound foolish by buying containers that are too large. The products may spoil before you use them.
Or you may be so sick of the product, you know, you'd be like, oh god, gotta eat that again, before it goes bad.
There's a lot of clever pricing too, where the larger sizes.
Yeah.
Right.
Higher per unit.
Sure it is.
That's why you have to just go by unit pricing, or price per pound, I think.
What about the generic brand products, which can mean substantial savings, particularly for those items whose quality is relatively indistinguishable from brand name items?
Check the ingredients.
It's okay.
Fine, that's a lot.
This is good. We use them and they're good.
Name on it.
They're good.
There's a lot of difference between brand name and generic product.
You're not paying for the TV ads.
That's right. Pay close attention to special sales and seasonal bargains.
That's very important.
Buy in bulk whenever possible and practical. If you chip in with friends and neighbors, you might be able to buy many products by the carton or case and realize considerable discounts. Most stores provide such price concessions, but only if you specifically ask them. Anybody belong to a co-op where you could buy things?
Oh yeah.
Yeah? Tell us about it.
Well, I used to go on one of these in Walnut Creek, and they had a group of co-ops around San Francisco, and they would buy in bulk and sell at a lower price than the chain stores would. Mm-hmm. However, the co-ops get into a lot of causes, so that a lot of the efforts were spent on those causes. And consequently, they started going under because the profits were being diverted into other things.
Yeah.
So I had a good experience from the standpoint that they had very quality merchandise when they were profitable. Mm-hmm. But a bad experience when they started closing stores. Mm-hmm. So, good and bad.
When we're talking about housing, I think we mentioned it in another session that we had about reverse mortgages. Do you all know what reverse mortgages are?
No.
No? If you own your home and you need income, some places now offer what's called a reverse mortgage, where if you go to the lending institution and they're susceptible to assuming your home, they will pay you as long as you live. But then when you die, the home reverts to them and they sell it.
But that's only used in a few states right now.
Right now.
Mm-hmm. That seems to me like that only really be beneficial if you had no heirs.
Yeah. That's one reason that some people do it. Some people do it because they have no other income. Mm-hmm. And they have a big house. Mm-hmm. And you can either, you know, take in roomers or try to sell a house. Some people want to remain in that house. And so this is a way of remaining in that house. Okay? How many of you use financial planners? This is a new industry. You have one?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You get good advice?
I think so.
Yeah.
So far.
So far.
We've worked with the same one for 25 years.
Mm-hmm. Oh, here's the dollar diet. One of the most common financial dilemmas is finding that there's too much month left after the end of the money. That's the dollar diet. Mm-hmm. This is largely a budgeting problem that can be remedied if you're willing to discipline yourself. And most people, when called upon to project their current budget, have no difficulty in estimating the major recurring expenses such as house or car payment. But as a rule, much of their other expenses fall into categories known as miscellaneous. And this unidentified category usually causes quite a bulge in the body of the budget. If you can reduce this miscellaneous expense, you would be on much sounder footing financially. Here's how to do it. Embark on the dollar diet. Carry a pencil and a notebook with you for 2 or 3 months. And every time you spend money, for whatever purpose, jot down the expenditure in the notebook. At the end of the time period, you will realize these major benefits. You will have a clear picture of where every penny went. Seeing it in writing will help you realize which expenditures are excessive and can be reduced. You can also find that by having to stop and to think for a few moments before you make a purchase, you will have developed the habit of deciding that many such expenses aren't necessary. The dollar diet is a self-correcting mechanism for the wayward budget. It costs nothing to try it, and the results are virtually guaranteed. You don't even have to wait until retirement to try it. How many are on the diet?
Well, I get a budget book every year. Mm-hmm. I put down every expense, so it's great because you can look back the year before. Right. You know, even a whole bunch of them, you can look back and find out what certain things are.
Mm-hmm. And how many carry a little notebook with you, and every time you spend a nickel,
when I come home,
you put it down? You do that?
I haven't this time, but yes, I really do.
Good.
I love doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Only thing is, when you figure out the end of the year, which you spent, one year is having such a good time, and I realized you had hardly anything under recreation.
Mm.
So I didn't know what to do about that, whether, you know, what, do good times cost anything?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah.
Have any of you ever made yourself up a net worth statement?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And also including your liabilities? And how you made out? That's an interesting exercise which you can go into. All right, let's talk a little bit about investment strategies. Not much time left. Putting your money to work, debt and equity. There are basically two ways to put your money to work, lending and buying, debt and equity. When you lend money, you receive a legal promise of repayment at some future time, plus a promise that you'll be paid a fee for the use of your money. This fee, of course, is known as interest. This form of putting your money to work is known as the debt market or the money market. When you lend money to a bank or a saving institution, the promise to repay the debt instrument is called a certificate of deposit. When you lend your money to a corporation, the promise to repay is called a corporate bond, long-term or commercial paper short-term, usually not more than 90 days. When you lend your money to the federal government, the promise to pay is called a treasury bill, a note, or bond, deciding on how long the debt is to run. When you lend your money to a state or local government, the promise to repay is called a municipal note or a municipal bond, again depending on the maturity of the debt. You need to be aware of an important phenomenon in the bond market. Once that you have invested in a bond, you are assured of receiving the same amount of interest each year. However, the value of the bond may go up or down depending on the condition of the insurer of the bond and depending on the general trend in interest rates throughout the country. As interest rates rise, the value of bonds tend to fall and vice versa. Thus, be aware that if you invest in long-term bonds and the need arises to cash them in before maturity, you may receive less than the amount you invested, or the amount of the face value of the bond. On the other hand, you may receive more than the amount you invested. There is no way of knowing the extent to which the value of the bond might rise or fall, which lends an element of speculation to longer-term bonds. So you were saying that the safest thing is?
Short-term government obligation is a T-bill.
A T-bill, okay.
3 months, 6 months, or 1 year, that's the bill. Up to 10 years is a note, and above that's the bond.
You know the difference between investing versus speculating?
I don't.
It says, before examining investment possibilities in more detail, you need to explore income tax considerations. One of the most critical areas of investment planning, and some investment questions. So investigate. That's what it says here. Your income taxes and investments are something which you need to be concerned about. We were audited this year in what they call a field audit. You know what a field audit is? Where the IRS comes into your home and says, I want to see all your records. You know why?
No.
Because an interest on a savings and loan account that we had, we didn't report. Just that one little thing. And they had it all on computer now, you know, and the savings banks, and
they received interest from us for this amount.
Well, that
I didn't report.
Strictly unintentional. We had several on one sheet. And the bottom line, without looking too thoroughly, he thought was the total, and it wasn't. It was this and this and this and this. So they asked us.
Did they give you notice ahead of time they were coming?
Oh, yeah. They said we'll be in there tomorrow. No, they called and they said they'd like an appointment. We started way back in October of last year. We finished up finally because we're in and out of the country and everything this past spring.
That's why I lost all his hair.
But that's a real experience. And they want to see everything.
How'd you make up and what? Were they satisfied with your answers?
No, we had to pay the income tax on the interest that we received that we didn't report.
Mm-hmm. Plus a penalty.
Plus a penalty.
But then they gave us some back, but they didn't explain why they gave it back.
Well, the lady who was doing the field audit made a mistake, see.
So,
So even the IRS is not...
No, not perfect.
Not perfect.
I just like... Okay, go ahead.
You can meet them someplace else in your house, though, right?
Well, in the past, you know, whenever we've had something that was questioned on income tax, we went down to the IRS office. Mm-hmm. But that's not a field audit. A field audit is in your home.
What's that word?
Do you have the option to refuse?
Field, F-I-E-L-D, okay. Field audit.
Which is the worst, because they know darn well you got every record in your house, and they do pull out every record.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not obligated to allow them to come into your home.
I think so.
I don't know how you can keep them out.
Put lawn chairs out on the front.
We live in a condominium on the 12th floor.
Oh, down on the floor. Then that's even a better excuse. The records are up on the 12th floor.
Or, I mean, you can set your appointment for the restaurant in the corner and meet them there. I don't think you...
You don't have the records there.
We can bring them.
That's
a problem. I don't think they... Do that.
That's not what a field audit is. Field audit is in your home.
I think you'd probably irritate them and probably be worse for them.
Sure, I'll say.
Well, you have to be nice to them, right?
I think they're very inefficient because I had a difficulty on my 1985 tax, and I got letters from Atlanta, Georgia, and I got letters from Andover, Massachusetts, and even one from Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
Well, that you covered.
About the same problem. Why don't they have it all centralized in one place?
Oh, dear.
Do you have your picture of the post office, too?
No. I just like to add one thing on an IRA CD, which I think is a neat little thing. Once a year, you are allowed to, if the interest rates go from 6 to 7, once a year, you are allowed to go in the bank and have this thing redone at 7% instead of 6%. Or whatever, and I think that's a real neat little trick because I've kind of watched that. And if the interest rate goes up at all, you can go in even for 0.5% and get the new 0.5% from then on.
Before maturity?
You don't pay any attention to maturity on an IRA.
Yes, there is.
Keep raising it as the rates go up. They can't go down.
You can have a rollover. from one IRA fund to another IRA fund. Let's call it a rollover, right?
I had one question.
Yes.
About the IRA. If you're 65 and you start withdrawing from your IRA, does that strictly become then a withdrawing IRA, or can you also keep adding into your IRA?
You can't add into your IRA once you become 70.
And a half. The year you become 70 and a half, you cannot put any into it.
But if you're 65 and you're withdrawing, can you still add in?
I'm not sure about that. Anybody know?
You probably have a new one.
What if you did that if I withdraw?
It's a different
product. You didn't use it all.
Yeah, what if you just, you know, wanted to withdraw it for a special purpose, and then you wanted to reinvest?
Once you're 65. But if you're 59, before 59, then you're penalized.
Yeah.
Okay?
Plus you get back in within 60 days.
Right. Okay, what time is it? Time to quit?
No, I want to hear about estate planning.
Oh, you want to hear about estate planning?
I'd like to. I mean, we're thinking about it.
Estate planning.
Well, is it wise or isn't it?
Is it wise? What do you feel? Anybody have any ideas there about estate planning?
I think very wise.
Very wise? Why?
I think it gives you a clear picture of what you can expect when you reach an age 65 or older. And also helps you in making some investments you probably wouldn't make otherwise.
Maybe I have the wrong term. But what I'm thinking of is so that you don't have to have a will probated for your spouse or your heirs.
Right.
Is that estate planning?
Yeah.
Well,
that's a will that you have drawn up with your attorney. It depends on the state where you live a good deal. But there are certain rules and regulations so that your estate, after you pass on, is not taxable according to your total estate value. There are federal taxes, and in some states there are state taxes. But if you work it out with an attorney, you can avoid most of that.
you can put it in trust, but as I understand it, it's an expensive process, and unless you have roughly X number of dollars, it's not worth all the costs involved to do it. And as far as I know, that's the only way you can avoid probate, but I think it's pretty costly.
Well, it runs around $600 or $700.
Yeah, it's costly, right?
It's costly.
Depends on how much of an estate you have as far as its value is concerned.
What do you mean, a trust with a bank?
Yeah.
The trust department of a bank?
No. You can have a trust for your money, for your estate, and put it in trust for it all goes in, well, I better tell you later.
There are all kinds of plans now which the churches are offering. You know, if you want to give your money to the ELCA Foundation, they will pay you out of whatever you put in there for as long as you live. But then the value of the estate there then goes to the ELCA or college or whatever it is. And this is one way in which people are doing it.